Beach County later on in the show, so stay tuned for that. But right now, as we do each and every week here on the program, it is time to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week here on the program, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. As you would imagine, the Inside the Ropes today is Masters Intensive, the 73rd edition of the Masters Tournament. And topic number one, Patrick, Greg Norman. We just saw him for two rounds over the weekend in his first Masters appearance since 2002. It's been 7 years since Greg Norman was in Augusta National and in Augusta, Georgia for the Masters Tournament. And he has some strong opinions about today's 1:35 p.m. pairing. Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, the seventh to last pairing going off at 1:35 today, exactly 1 hour before the final pairing of Angel Cabrera and Kenny Perry. And Greg Norman thinks that Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are equal in every category except for one. When it comes to the ability to sink a long putt under pressure to perhaps win a tournament, he thinks Tiger is light years ahead of Mickelson. Tiger, Greg Norman said, quote, "Tiger to me is the best clutch putter I've ever seen in the game of golf," end quote. I think Tiger's got him on the mental edge. That is Phil. Tiger's got Phil on the mental edge, and Tiger has got him outside of 9 feet. In fact, Tiger's the greatest putter from 9 feet and longer ever. In regards to Jack Nicklaus, Tiger and Nicklaus are equal inside of 6 feet, Greg Norman says. But outside of 9 feet, when you start getting to 9, 10, 11 feet, Woods is by far the best putter I have ever seen in the game from that distance, end quote. Pat, your thoughts?
I'm not going to disagree with Greg too much because obviously he plays with these guys and he has a much better view of them than I do. I will say this. I think Tiger's a much better thinker than Phil. I think Phil still occasionally makes a stupid play, and Tiger almost never does. In fact, I can't think of a time where you're like, what's he doing? Why is he trying this shot or whatever? Tiger, even a lot of the goofy shots that you think he's trying, are it's really calculated to what he knows he can do with his game, and most of the time he pulls those shots off when he does do them. But as a thinker, I think Tiger's way ahead of Phil. I will say this. I think Tiger's maybe as unbelievable as Phil is with his short game and stuff like that. I think Tiger's a better short game player than Phil. I think he's better sand player. I think he chips better than Phil. Phil will pull off a spectacular shot much more often than Tiger will. But overall consistency, I think Tiger's better. Now, putting, completely agree with Greg. I think, you know, 6 feet and in, I think Tiger and Phil are probably about the same. But 9 feet and over, there is nobody, and I mean nobody, that makes more long putts, especially in pressure situations, than Tiger. Let's just go through the last couple of years, both times at Bay Hill on 18, making ridiculously long putts. And then you go to the U.S. Open last year, and I mean, he made like five putts that, you know, you might make one of those. And he made, you know, two on 13, I think, two on 18. I mean, just ridiculous putts that, you know, guys just aren't going to make.
Like 45 and 50 just, and 55 feet putts.
Right. Go back to the U.S. amateurs that he played, you know, making just long putts and those things to beat guys. I mean, it's just staggering. You talk about a top 10. Tiger's probably got a top 30 of long putts that he's made to win tournaments that, you know, other guys might have five of those, and he's probably got 30 of them. So from that distance on, I completely agree with Greg.
Okay, I agree with you, Pat. I really agree with your sentiments. I think you're right on with Phil, and I think Greg Norman's right on with Phil and Tiger, the comparison. Of course, we'll see them paired today at 1:35 going off of hole number one. I think Phil is just as talented as Tiger in almost every facet, but Tiger just has him on the mental side. And as we know, in the game of golf, the mental side is so important. It's 90% of this game.
It is, and Phil just, even at age 38 or whatever he is now, still makes that occasional goofy play, and it costs him. All right, number two goes to you, Russ, as it always does. We're talking about the Masters, and of course, the back nine, everybody's going to be focused on that because that's when the tournament is usually won or lost on that back nine. Stealing from Jack Nicklaus.
Jack Nicklaus, don't we have that moniker somewhere on PGA Nationals?
Yeah, PGA, where the grounds? Tournament will be won and lost. But let's talk about some great back nine comebacks or finishes. And let me hear your opinion on which one of these is, you think is the greatest. So we'll start back way back in 1962. Arnold Palmer comes home with a 5-under par 31 for a 4-under 68 in which he beats Gary Player by 3 and Dal Fisterwall by 9 in a subsequent playoff when they used to play the playoffs. That's number one. Number two, 1978, Gary Player, who we've been talking about a lot today, closes with a 6-under par 30, including a birdie at the last hole to be 3 runners up by a shot. 1986, my personal favorite. Jack Nicklaus makes 5 birdies and an eagle for a 6-under 30 to beat Greg Norman and Tom Kite by a stroke. 1990, Nick Faldo birdies 13, 15, and 16 to force a playoff over Ray Floyd, which he then won. And then finally, 2004, Phil Mickelson birdies 5 of 7 closing holes to beat Ernie Els by a shot.
Well, those are all great comebacks, and obviously the most recent was Phil in 2004, and up until this year, we had been saying that was the last time we had a phenomenal, exciting back nine Sunday at the Masters when I think Ernie was like 3-under par his final 5 holes, and he still loses by a shot to Phil, who had a back nine 31. That was a great Masters to watch, but I think the discussions really is... It starts and ends here. There's only been 3 Masters champions to have a back nine 30 the year they won. Jimmy DeMeritt in 1940, Gary Player, as you mentioned, in 1978, and Jack Nicklaus in the miracle 1986 Masters at the age of 46, the oldest Masters champion ever. I think that's the, and those were on Sunday. Now, there's an asterisk to that argument, or that sentence, and I'll get to that in a second. But in regards to those final back nine 30s on Sunday, there's no doubt Jack Nicklaus is number one. I think you have to agree that Jack Nicklaus's 30 on Sunday in 1986 at the age of 46, it was the most magical comeback ever. He ends up overtaking Greg Norman. That was one of Greg Norman's, you know, star-struck years when he just couldn't get it done. And it was, that was one of the times that it was somebody else, not Greg, imploding, which was the case in 1996. And Nick Faldo was the benefactor that year. But I think it's Jack Nicklaus in 86. All those other comebacks were great. Arnold Palmer in 62 and Gary Player in 78, and Jimmy DeMeritt, if you want to go back way back to 1940, and obviously Phil Mickelson's 31 in 04 was spectacular as well, but for me, it begins and ends with Jack's 30 in 1986.
Russ, hold off on that, Colin. This is my highlight of my golf career is 86 to Jack Nicklaus. Are you kidding me? Absolutely, Russ. Nothing even comes close to this. Of course, I didn't see half of them, but out of 1990 and 2004, 86... I remember I was in college, Russ, I was a senior, just sitting around, you know, thinking, you know, not even thinking that Jack had a shot. I think he was like 6 or 7 shots back when he made the turn. You know, he was 1 or 2 under, I think, on the front nine. He birdies 10. I can't remember what he did on 11, but I remember he bogeyed 12, and he's PO'd because there was a spike mark in front of him. That's why he missed the putt. He, like, slammed his big putter at the time, the big-headed putter, you know, on that spike mark. And he used that to, like, spur him on. And I think he eagled 13. Can't remember what he did, 14, but he eagled 15. And, you know, just that's when it, like, Vern Lundquist and people were starting to talk. Like, Nicklaus is, like, making a run. Like, they ended up starting to focus on him. He almost makes a hole in one on 16, you know, the great birdie on 17, almost birdies 18. He would have shot 29 with a bogey. I'm getting goosebumps just like recalling it in my head right now, you know, how great that was. And for my money, absolutely. That was the best. In golf, that's the best back nine of all time. All right, there you go. Now you can do it.
Another sounder. Great job, Colin Holder, with issuing the sounder once again after Pat was given
double ball in the hole.
Given an opportunity to opine. Well, I'm glad we agree. And Jack's back nine in 1986 was one of the few times in history since I've been alive where I will never forget where I was. Now, there's been the Challenger explosion, which was also in 1986, the O.J. Simpson car chase in 1994, Jack's final round in the 86 Masters. Those are a couple times that I'll never forget where I was when I was watching it. And I was 10 years old, and I was watching it in the Florida room. Remember, houses back in the day in Florida had what were called Florida rooms. And it was my grandfather's house in Lantana, and we were watching it on an Easter Sunday in 1986. And it was phenomenal. It was magical. And we agree. That was the greatest back nine charge on a Sunday in Masters history. Now, I told you there was an asterisk. Real quickly before we get to the next one, I think Tiger's back 9:30 at the 1997 Masters, which came on a Thursday, I think that was a phenomenal back 9:30. Now, obviously, it was on Thursday. It wasn't on Sunday, but it's the only Tiger's 70 in the first round of the 97 Masters, the only under par round in Masters history with a 10-stroke differential from 1-9 to the other. We remember he went out in 4 over par 40, and then all of a sudden, he flipped a switch. He birdied 10, with a 15-foot putt. He chipped in for another birdie at 12. He birdied 13 with two putts. He eagled the 15th after a pitching wedge in, and he birdied the 17th with a 12-foot putt. For Tiger, at the age of 21, to be able to flip a switch on the fly from 1-9 to the next and be 10 shots better and a back 9-30 on Thursday, and that really jump-started him. He went on to shoot 66, 65, 69, a record 270, winning by 12 strokes. To me, that's phenomenal. And for him to be able to flip a switch and be that much better in the blink of an eye is just, to me, why Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time.
And I don't disagree with that either, Russ, because I remember when he shot that 40, the announcers at the time were saying something like, well, you know, welcome to major golf or something like major professional golf and blah, blah, blah. And like you said, and then he goes and shoots 30 on the back. And from then on, it's kind of shut everybody up.
And the rest is history.
Correct.
Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic. We are entrenched in our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Dateline Augusta, Georgia, topic number three. We are remaining with the Masters intensive topics. John Daly was in Augusta this week as well, only a few weeks from the end of John Daly's six-month suspension from the PGA Tour. He is slimmer than he's been in years. He has lost 40 pounds. He had surgery. He had the stomach surgery to shrink his stomach. Daly is kicking off what could be called his comeback tour at the Masters this week. He is selling hats and clothes and books and autographed items out of his RV directly across the street from Augusta National in Augusta, Georgia. The money he makes from shilling his merchandise is going to go to help him stave off bankruptcy. I mentioned he did lose 40 pounds. He's now working with Rick Smith, Phil Mickelson's former swing coach, and he plans in the next few weeks to play in Europe, in Spain, Italy, and Ireland, and then he'll make his return to the PGA Tour this summer after that six-month suspension ends. Pat, your thoughts?
Where do you want me to go, Russ? There's so many things wrong with this. I mean, you know, and John's been doing this for the last few years where, you know, it's almost like he's a sideshow at some circus now where he's out front, you know, in front of the, you know, where they can legally
the
keep
Hooters.
Him as far away as possible, but he's allowed to be there.
He's at the Hooters on Washington
Street
in
picture,
Augusta.
I saw with him, he had his shirt off again. This is like the latest with him. Every time they take a picture of him, he's got his shirt off. All right, a couple real quickie things here. You know, I'm not going to disparage anybody that feels like they need to get surgery to control their weight. But that should be an absolute last-ditch thing to do because there are no quick fixes with anything, Russ. If you really want to do something, you know, that's going to be permanent, you almost have to try, you know, to get there with good old-fashioned hard work. He needed to do whatever he needed to do to try to lose the weight and change his lifestyle so that it wouldn't come back on. You can change things surgically, but a lot of people that get this gastro bypass surgery end up putting the weight back on because it's not something that they've worked at, number one, and have been able to ingrain in themselves a way to change their lifestyle so they do not gain that weight again. So I hope he keeps it off. I hope it works for him. But for a lot of people, it's like winning the lottery. You know, all of a sudden you got a ton of money and you don't know what to do with it. And you end up blowing it because you haven't gotten to that point in your life where you've earned it in increments and appreciated it and been able to figure out how to maintain it. So I hope he's able to keep the weight off. You know, the other comment where he says he's drinking a little bit, not much. No, John, you're an alcoholic. A little bit, you can't drink a little bit. Any bit, you know, is bad for somebody like John. What I'd like to see out of John is I'm taking the next year off. I am going to go to a rehab. I'm going to get my situation with alcohol straight. I'm going to figure out what I need to do to make myself a stronger person. Then maybe I can start dealing with my weight issues in conjunction. I don't know if you can do both at the same time, but handle the alcohol first, then deal with your weight issues, then start dealing with your personal life and not marrying everybody that comes along that, you know, bats their eyes at you and have 15 different kids with 15 different women. Get that situation in your life squared away and then start concentrating on golf. I mean, I know it might be too late for him. He's 40-some years old at this point.
45.
But John's got probably 5 years to try and do something on the senior tour, which I think he'd be a great draw for that if he was clean, sober, in shape, and had his personal life squared away. I know a lot of people relate to John because of all the foibles that he has, but trust me, he's going to kill himself before he gets to 50 if he keeps on this track. We've said this often. And whether if you like John because he's such a screw-up, then that's a problem with you. But for the talent that John has and that he's wasting, I'd really like to see him get a lot of the personal issues squared away with himself and then hit the senior tour at age 50 and try and make something of his golfing career before it's too late. I hope that happens with him, but these comments are not giving me much hope, Russ.
Actually, I take that back on his age. He's actually he'll be 43 in 2 weeks. April 28th, John Daly will turn 43. So not as old as I thought. And I mean, that's part of the story with him. He looks older than he really is because he's in such bad physical condition. Pat, I agree with you. We've said it so many times on the show. I used to be a fan of John Daly back in the days when he was winning majors and, you know, the 91 PGA Crooked Stick, the 95 British Open at St. Andrews. He was a fun character to watch. He was one of the most outgoing and electric personalities on the PGA Tour, and that was pre-Tiger Woods. So, you know, he stood out a lot. But he's just a train wreck. His life is a train wreck. He is such a tragic figure.
It's not funny. It is. It's tragic.
Right. So much talent, and it's really been wasted.
It's a shame. It's just heart-wrenching to see a guy with that kind of talent relegated to selling artifacts at a Hooters with his shirt off.
Out of an RV.
I mean, it's a shame. All right, last one goes to you, Russ. Gary Player, we talked about a lot this show and how this was his final Masters. Should he now be paired with Arnie Palmer to kick things off on Thursday with the ceremonial tee-off?
Absolutely. I think it's a great idea that now Gary Player is officially done competing at the Masters on, you know, in Thursday's first round and Friday's second round. And listen, he broke 80 both days. So that is from a 73-year-old man in Gary Player. He nearly shot his age each day, just 3 or 4 strokes off each day. It's impressive to me. I really think that's impressive. He should join Arnold Palmer, and he should be the second ceremonial starter at the Masters. And I think so that will be the situation next year. I would like to see that as the scenario in 2010. Arnold Palmer and Gary Player hitting ceremonial tee shots off of number one tee early Thursday morning. And then the next year after that, in 2011, I would love to see Jack Nicklaus join them, and they'd be the triumvirate like they've always been, the big three, Arnie and Jack and Gary, you know, starting off every Masters the same way, hitting tee shots off of number one there on Thursday morning.
And I think it will happen, Russ. I think by that time, Jack will be far enough removed from really feeling like he can be competitive in this thing that he's not feeling like this is just some kind of a token appearance and, you know, it really doesn't mean anything. To have the big three, which these guys really were in the 60s, dominate golf, and to come back, you know, in the 2010s, and really all of them with as many Masters jackets as they have, I mean, they would almost surpass Snead and Sarazen and Nelson,
Byron Nelson, right,
in terms of, you know, just a star quality of guys, you know, bridging that generation gap, you know, to lead us into the next, you know, these guys, Player's fit, Arnie's fit, and Jack's fit. They could do this for another 15 years if they wanted.
God willing.
I just think it would be a great, you know, again, pass off from one generation to the next group of guys. And I think Jack will do it at some point.
All right, another award-winning edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week here on the show, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. Of course, this week was extremely Masters-intensive in tribute to the 73rd Masters Tournament, and it's brought to you each and every week by PGA National Resort and Spa. Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you, Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic. The time is now to start calling in, 888-760-3776, 888-760-3776.